I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite, I just need sperm.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Spermcast. I am so excited to share this episode with you. I just love this interview so much, and my guest, he's just so wonderful. I can't wait to share it with you, so we're just going to jump right into it. But first, I want to thank my patrons real quick, because let's be honest, I wouldn't be able to have this show without them. Okay, we have Ashley Wager, or Wager, I'm not sure which one it is, and Alyssa Shapiro. Thank you too so much for making your contributions and subscribing to the Patreon. I don't have any updates for the podcast today, but tomorrow I have a doctor's appointment and I'll be looking at my uterine lining and we'll be figuring out whether or not this is the month that I can, you know, move forward with my transfer. So my fingers are so tightly crossed and I'll let you all know tomorrow on the Patreon. Okay, now we can get started with this interview that I love so much. You may recognize my guest from his years on Mad TV. He teaches and directs at Second City. He's got a show that he co-wrote that was running off Broadway. He's headed to DC in a few days to direct a show at the Kennedy Center. And in today's episode, we get to hear how his beautiful family was formed. Frank Cayetti.
Hi.
Hi, friend.
How are you, friend?
In case you didn't hear that, his name is Frank Cayetti.
Last time I saw you was probably when I took your headshots.
No.
No?
I feel like we've seen each other around
Where?
Since then. At I.O.
Yeah,
I mean, but it's been a little while since I.O. was open.
Headshots was what, like 7, 5?
5 years ago. 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
Cool.
But it's nice to see you.
It's nice to
Let's
see you.
Let's pick up right where we left off.
Where did we leave off?
I don't know.
Well, before this, we were talking about alcohol, friends, boys.
Boys.
And that's it.
Yeah. That's all, you know, normal.
The listeners didn't need to hear any of that stuff.
They didn't.
No.
It was personal.
It's too personal.
The subject matter of this particular podcast is not personal at all.
Not at all. This is just boring.
How brave of you.
Oh, come on.
It's very brave.
Thank you. I don't mean come on. Thank you.
I think thank that you. It can be a very difficult thing to talk about.
I think it was scary at first for me because I was like, it wasn't just like, am I going to do this podcast and talk about all this stuff out loud and admit to the world that I can't find a man or whatever. But it was also, I was deciding whether or not I was going to pursue having a baby. But like, it was like a very big choice to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was brave. But since then, it's like I'm almost dependent on my listeners.
But I imagine it's therapeutic in some way for you.
Yeah.
And I also think as a person that I'm pretty stoic in many ways. So I find when you are open, you are met with openness.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're a very easy person to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's nice. But I think in general, my normal mode is probably not as open.
I hear ya. And
so
I think
when
that's
you
true.
Do so, when you're brave... You talk about really vulnerable things. I think that's what people are attracted to and want to listen to.
Yeah. I like what you said about other people opening up too, because I do experience that and people share their feelings and stories with me and it feels good to, just be that person for them. I like when people share their feelings with me.
Yeah.
Speaking of people sharing their feelings with me, there are a handful of you that have sent me emails. There are a lot of people that have sent me emails, but there are a handful of you that I haven't gotten back to yet. And that's just because I'm a dumbass. I mean, I'm not a dumbass, but sometimes I get your email when I'm down in the dumps or I am racing from one thing to the next. And I want you to know that I've received your emails, that they've pierced my soul, and that I plan on responding to all of them. So if you haven't received a response from me, I'm really sorry. Sometimes the timing is just not right. Anyway, that's on the to-do list this week. I love hearing from you. I just need to carve out the time to send equally thoughtful responses. And also, I think I've said this on the podcast before, so sorry to repeat myself. Okay, bye.
I have a friend that I have known since junior high school, and he and I were lucky enough for a few years to do this gig together. He still lives in Chicago. I live in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
But we would always... He was just such a good friend, and we would always just always talk about deep stuff. Like, there was very little superficial.
Mm.
We just would see each other, hit the ground running. I don't get to see him as much because that gig went away. But I like that. Anytime I see him, we're into it.
Yeah, there's no bullshit.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm terrible at small talk.
I think most people are.
And it's, well, I mean, I guess I can't be that terrible at it because I do. There's a little small talk.
We're doing it right now.
And I guess when I take
headshots. The weather is so nice.
And when they take headshots, there's like a lot of small talk that has to happen at first. But when headshots get good, when they get good, when I'm taking pictures, is when I start sharing shit about myself. Because then the person that's listening is like, they let their guard down and they can be themselves and they can talk about their own stuff or whatever they want to talk about.
Boom.
Boom. Personality on camera, acting, they win. They there get
you
jobs.
Go. But in as many ways, I mean, you are responsible to make them be at their most natural and comfortable, mm-hmm. right? That's a skill.
And that's why, you know, I let my house be really messy when they arrive so they don't feel too uptight.
Oh, is that planned strategy?
No, but that's the excuse I use when they come and I haven't cleaned yet. I go, well, it's just to make you feel more at home and comfortable.
I feel I can use that with children.
So you have children?
I do.
Oh.
I do. I have two children.
What? Yeah. I actually didn't know that.
I do.
Wow. See, I have no idea, except I know.
Do you want me to tell you my story?
Okay, let's start from the beginning.
Of my life with children?
Just ever. No, I guess the beginning of the idea of having kids. When did you get married?
I got married in 2007.
Gotcha.
We were married. We talked about in our family planning to having children.
Mm-hmm.
And she has an adopted brother. And mm-hmm. so part of our family planning was talking about adoption in addition to having a biological child.
Oh.
So just to make it as quick as possible, long story short.
You don't have to make it quick. We have time.
I'm going to go quick, though.
What if you say it all and we're done? And I don't have... Right. Okay, fine.
It can go forever, though. So you're going to have to ask questions and stuff.
Okay, okay.
Because the process is intense.
Okay.
We tried and encountered some difficulties as things that you've experienced and that many people do.
Mm-hmm.
And we were finally lucky enough to conceive and we had a daughter. She's 8 now. So we were lucky enough to have a daughter who's now 8. She's in third grade. She's mm-hmm. wonderful. Mm-hmm.
But you guys did IVF? Or you tried for a while and
we were having some difficulties. We had to look at some stuff,
do some things.
But we ended up, we're lucky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool.
Then we were interested in adoption, and in particular, my wife, Rachel, had worked at a nonprofit in Hollywood working with a lot of former foster youth, so she uh-huh. got interested in that population, and there's so many kids, and Los Angeles County has more kids in the foster program than like 46 other states.
Wow.
It's gigantic. So she felt really connected, and when we were talking about it, because there's many routes that you can go with adoption. What we ended up deciding was going through the county, which is always a foster to adopt situation.
Okay.
Private adoption
which
is different.
Which means you start out fostering and then after a certain amount of time, you can potentially adopt.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. We'll get more into it. I'm assuming.
That's it. I mean, you nailed it. So yes, that was our intention.
Okay.
So we went to like an informational meeting and that was kind of kooky. I don't remember much about it other than it was kind of a mess.
It's just for you to learn the like what to do.
Do you want to get certified as a foster parent?
Gotcha.
Here's what you need to do. blah, blah, blah.
I'm curious. I want to go to one of those.
You should.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I also highly recommend, we went through an agency.
Mm-hmm.
Very Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
Super Hollywood. So it's like a guy wearing a Bluetooth, never sits at his desk, he's always standing. He's like, Frankie, hit me. What do you need? You want a baby? I was like, yeah. So we did. We auditioned a lot of different babies.
Oh, my God.
No, it was an agency, but it, I don't know what that means other than
it's an adoption. Was it an adoption agency?
Correct.
Okay.
They were called SCFA, which was, it's a Norwegian term.
Meaning?
No, oh. No, it's an acronym. SCFA. It's an acronym, Southern California Foster Family something agency. Okay. It ended up changing names. It's now called Extraordinary Families. I cannot recommend them.
That's more Hollywood.
It is. It kind of is.
Extraordinary Families. So you recommend them?
Absolutely.
Okay.
They're wonderful.
Oh my gosh.
The people there, the organization there.
Oh my gosh.
It's incredible.
Okay.
They're the best.
Okay.
You can go to extraordinaryfamilies.org. And here's what their website says. It says, we are a leading nonprofit foster family adoption and advocacy agency dedicated to improving the daily lives and long-term outcomes of children and youth in foster care. We recruit, train, and support high-quality foster and adoptive resource parents. Oh, instead of adoptive, they call them resource parents. For children removed from their families due to abuse or neglect. We welcome a diverse population of individuals and families to serve as resource parents regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity and expression, disability, marital or domestic partner status, political affiliation, or ancestry. Resource families are viewed as members of a team providing individualized care so each child can reach his or her fullest potential.
If you're interested in adoption, for the listeners...
Yeah.
Please contact them if you live in Southern California. They're amazing.
Oh my gosh.
They were so helpful and they continue to be. We still have a relationship. We go to Extraordinary
I've
Families.
I've already forgotten
events.
The name. Oh, there you go.
Not SCFA. It used
to
be SCFA.
No, I was thinking Extreme Families.
Extreme Families. Now that's like in Moab, like Utah. People ride mountain bikes and like, we're going to get you a kid. So they're great. So we went to an informational meeting there and that was like, this is good. These people are good. The county version of the meeting was just kind of, it felt like it was a mess. It was kind of incoherent. And so a few months later, we started classes at SCFA, aka Extraordinary Families. You go through this whole process to get certified.
Okay, so I'm confused. The first meeting that you went to was the county meeting or the agency meeting?
County meeting.
I see. And then you went to SCFA Extraordinary.
Yes.
And they had their own type of meeting.
Yes. I think we went to an orientation there. We definitely took classes there.
I see.
Certification classes.
Okay.
It cost a certain amount of money. I don't exactly recall what it was, but it was well worth it.
And is this the same type of class somebody would go to if they just want to foster and not potentially adopt?
Okay. Yeah. So there were all kinds of different people there. People that were interested in fostering, people that were interested in fostering to adopt.
Okay.
All kinds of people. And it was actually really inspiring to go because it was super diverse, which is cool.
Yeah.
We felt like the boring white people there. And it was just really diverse. And there were gay couples and lesbian couples and single women and single men. And there was just, it was all kinds of different ethnicities. It was cool.
Cool.
And all of these people looking to help a kid, which I think that's cool.
Yeah.
So you go through the classes and you learn a lot. They prepare you as best they can. And I would say, you know, obviously it was like 24 hours of classes or something. It was really nice for my wife and I, too, to go, like, because it was a thing that we did on Thursday nights together. Like, we had a little kid. At that time, our daughter was, I think, 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it was a thing that we did together. But sometimes it's tough. Like, you don't get that time because you got a kid.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we learned a lot. And it was, you know, it is a mix of, like, scary and enlightening and all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, felt very inspired. And it's the most exhaustive process I've ever been through. Like, there's no stone unturned. Like, so you go through all these classes and then there's a series of home studies and inspections, which is cool. Figuring, hey, if we're gonna let you have a kid who may have some trauma in your house, we want to make sure that you're not messed up as best we can. And we want to make sure that you have a safe house and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot. Like, it was, the most intense thing I've ever done as far as, like, being open and talking to people. Like, they don't assume that everyone's perfect. They're not saying that a foster parent has to be a perfect human being. Mm-hmm. They're just saying like, okay, look, you're going to get a child that's likely going to have trauma. How have you dealt with the trauma in your life? How do you manage it? Bah, bah, bah. Nobody's perfect, right?
Right.
And certainly they do way more checking than they would on somebody that has a biological child.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it is, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It prepares you, I think. And they're pretty honest about it. Like, they're saying, look, you're a well-adjusted adult. We're the roller coaster is going to be on you. We're going to try to maintain as much stability for the child as possible. Because this is a child. Makes sense. So it's like, it's not about you. If this helps through the proceedings for our son, through foster to adopt, my son had an attorney, his biological mom had an attorney, and DCFS has an attorney.
Wow.
We are not legally represented. We're represented in like what the social workers write in their reports and all of that stuff, but we don't have legal representation at that table at that point. So like, it's an indication of like, hey,
yeah,
you know, foster parents, you're low on the totem pole.
Yeah, yeah.
So the experience happened and we went through classes and we finished everything. And
you got a certification?
Got certification.
Okay.
Which is required to foster. Uh-huh. All along the line, we're very clear about like that we're interested in fostering to adopt, that we're open to and actually prefer a baby. Mm-hmm. Some people, like, I think, like, babies terrify them, newborns or, you know, young children, because that's a lot. Mm-hmm. There was one couple in our classes. I was so inspired by them, but it was a lesbian couple, and one of the women in the couple had a child very young, and she gave it up for adoption.
Oh.
Now she was a little older and felt more prepared and in a stable relationship and said, I want to now adopt, but their preference was a teenage gay or lesbian kid.
Wow.
You know? So I'm like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, kind of full circle for her, because I imagine she carried something with her, which was difficult, but probably the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it so inspiring. And it's tough because kids, as they get older, it becomes tough for them to get adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids that are older have a little bit more say. So there's a matching process.
Interesting.
With an infant, not so much.
Right.
So we told them all the stuff we were interested in, and we were not certified yet. We were supposed to go down to the agency to sign the papers to be certified. We had completed everything. We weren't fully certified.
Oh.
And we got our first call.
Okay.
So it was like, now, I believe it was a Thursday.
Who's responsible for this? Like, who's setting this up? The agency is matching you, or
yeah.
are you looking through a book, or is the kid of the agency looking? I don't know. Who's selecting? What's happening?
In our case, I don't know the answer to that 100% of the time. There are different situations as kids are older where like they will meet and spend a little time with prospective adoptive parents or foster parents. So they feel like they have a little control in the situation. And obviously a kid who's a bit older, it's sometimes likely that they may have bounced around.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad news, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to give them some say, I think.
Mm-hmm.
For us, there was nothing that we looked at. There was no like database where we're like, that person, you know, was it like swipe right?
Right.
Is that the good thing or bad
thing? That's good.
Swipe right?
Yeah.
I'm married. I know. But I've looked at Tinder, a friend's Tinder profile, and I can see how that would be addicting.
Oh, it is addictive. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So, no, there was no database. They just kind of knew what we wanted. So, the county talks to these agencies because those are resources. So, the county does all the intake, and then they call the agency, and then the agency's like, we got somebody that's looking for some of these things potentially.
Gotcha.
We'll call them.
Okay.
So, I believe this is a Thursday. I'm pretty certain it was. And we're supposed to go down on Monday and do our certification. But Thursday, we get this call. It's like mid-afternoon. And we get this very minimal demographic information, infant, African-American boy, 6 weeks old.
Aww.
Potentially exposed to drugs in utero. You have 15 minutes.
What? 15 minutes for what?
To call back. Because they got to move on, man.
Oh, my God.
The kid was detained that day.
Oh, sweet baby.
Yeah. So we sat there and we talked about it for a minute. And like it was like intense.
Mm-hmm.
It was very intense. I remember sitting there and just like, wow, this is happening. And we were talking about improv earlier.
Uh-huh.
And I honestly feel that improv informed this decision because I'm pretty play it safe. I'm like a cautious person, like in many ways in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I probably, I'll be completely honest, I probably wouldn't have done this without my wife's urging. I would have probably been too afraid, just a scaredy cat. So I appreciate her bravery and willingness to put up with my scary catness. My lack of bravery. So we're sitting there, and then I was just like, yeah, I think we should do this. You know, there were so many unanswered questions.
Yeah.
We had no idea, but they knew our criteria, which was one of the things we were interested in, like in a list of like, it would be great if it were a boy, but we're open to it being a girl.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be great if the child is younger than our daughter to maintain like a birth order. So since she's first, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Open on race and predominantly in Los Angeles County, it is mostly Latin, X and African-American, though there are white and Asian kids and all kinds, but the predominantly that.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the call, we say yes, and within 2 hours, the child is there.
No.
Literally like...
At your house?
Yeah. My daughter had taken a nap, and when she woke up, she had a potential brother there.
Oh,
it was a lot. It was a lot.
Oh, my
But imagine
God.
His day... There's so many things that are heartbreaking about this. There is this thing that kills me. It kills me anytime I think about it. They have to gather stuff quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
It's very often black trash bags.
Oh,
so the kid's possessions are in a trash bag. That's he's not cognitive of, or, you know, cognizant of that.
Yeah.
But like just that message, like grab what you can, because the detainment. Hopefully it isn't too traumatic or dramatic.
Detainment is such a terrible word. What is it that you're describing?
Well, at that point, they're taking the child from the parent.
Oh, that's what's happening?
Yes.
They're detaining the child from...
Correct.
I thought this baby was sitting in a some sort of orphanage, which don't exist. I know they don't.
No,
but
he was with his mom.
Oh my goodness.
It's rough.
Oh my goodness.
Not to say that she didn't get ample chances prior to this. It wasn't like kick down the door, we're taking your kid.
Right.
There was a huge process that happened before this ever occurred.
Do you know if you were the first call or not?
Oh.
You've never thought about that?
I'd like to think we were a first call. I think we were, but my wife might be able to confirm that. I don't remember.
I don't know why.
You develop a relationship.
It's just interesting.
With the agency, in particular your person, your social worker who asks you all of these really these questions.
Right. They know you.
The weirdest shit. Oh. Like, I was so forthright. I didn't really know what to share, but they were like, do you have pornography in my wife in your house? And I was like, I told her where my wife's dildo is, like, like where our lube is. Like, and I'm like, is that pornography? I don't know. Like, it's just, like, and I'm like, you know, we look at it online sometimes. Like, I didn't really know what to say.
I don't think, people don't really keep that stuff around anymore, do they?
No. Like, I don't have stacks and stacks of Playboys.
Now
it's all digital.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe digital dildos.
Yeah. Digital. You know, like we're an adult couple that don't have a kid. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
We're not like, we don't have a fuck swing. But like, you know what I mean? Like, it was.
Is that what they're called?
I don't know. I've never been on one.
I'll have to look
someday,
that up.
There's probably a park somewhere in LA that has a fuck swing.
called a sex swing.
Here's position one. I'm gonna put my butt on the seat. My feet or thighs can go in the stirrup, and my hands can go wherever. This is ideal for penis-vagina sex, penis-anus sex, strap-on sex if the partner wears it and puts it in me, or strap-on sex if I wear the strap-on and the partner backs up into me. Someone short or on their knees can go down on me, and if we wanna make it even more acrobatic, one person can sit on the seat facing outward while the other person uses the stirrups and handles to swing too. I can have my legs on top of my partner's shoulders, relaxed against the door for oral sex. Oral sex on my stomach. Someone could be here in front of me and another person could be behind me for more oral, vaginal, anal, or digital play. The sex swing gives me a lot of control whether I'm receiving, penetrating, both, or neither because I can moderate the movement.
Wow, very informative and very cool. Christmas is coming up, so you know.
So anyways, what were we talking about?
Oh my God. You told your relationship with the social worker, she knew.
Yes.
She knew you guys. She was.
Yes.
Or
so,
he.
She. It was a she. This whole process dominated by women.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's an interesting thing for me as a straight white male to observe this. And it's a little disappointing, in my opinion, for men and for just for, I mean, Los Angeles is a very diverse place, but I don't know. I mean, I can't make venture a guess, but almost everybody we dealt with were women.
Yeah.
It's like, and it feels kind of, I don't know, like there's, why is that relegated? Why is that, you know, the same way that like, if my daughter, when she's 18, gets pregnant, we're responsible for that kid, probably not the dad's family, right?
Right.
Like, why is that?
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know. So I'm questioning these things.
Yeah.
And just an observation.
But as far as the industry goes, I mean, it is like, we can't deny that there's a maternal instinct.
For sure. And so, and of course, I don't know.
But maybe we can raise our young boys, and we're starting to raise our young boys to be more, to for the gender sort of roles to not be so specific.
Yeah. There. I mean, we're probably in 2019, the most gender fluid we've ever been. We got somewhere to go, plenty of place to go, right? And we live in Los Angeles, which is probably in particularly sensitive to that as opposed to other places.
Right.
But I found that interesting, and I didn't really know why. I mean, in some ways, I guess I do know why, but I just found it disappointing in some ways, too, that where are we? Like, represent, dudes. What the hell? So he showed up. So the trash bags, that's the worst.
Oh, yeah.
So they have their stuff. He shows up. And it's frankly kind of weird. This is the first time we've ever done this. There's this kid in her house and he's okay. Like both my wife and I are not afraid of babies and changing diapers and all that stuff. We were, you know, prepared. We had a crib. We were ready to roll. The social worker that does the detainment, you never see again because then you're assigned a different social worker. So this person, they do some paperwork. They talk you through. She's there for maybe 30 minutes. And then you're like, well, so.
But that's not the woman you were. That's not the woman at the agency. That's different.
No.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
So this agency woman met our son, but not till later.
Gotcha.
There's a lot of handing off. Like people have different responsibilities in that. So from there starts the process, which is pretty intense as far as, and you feel pretty prepared for it through class and stuff. Certification, you feel like you get an idea. Every case is different because the variable of what's occurring. And you learn in class that family law is, you know how criminal law is innocent until proven guilty. Family law is reunification unless there are no other options. So the law is trying to reunify with the biological parent. And I firmly believe rightfully so.
Yeah.
So they're giving them ample opportunity based on whatever the detainment was. It could be a myriad of things, homelessness, drug use, whatever. In our case, it was a little bit of both, but she had tested positive for drugs while she was pregnant. So she was flagged. She had to be in treatment. It was part of her court order. She couldn't maintain treatment. That's why he was detained. She's not a bad person. She's not incapable of love. Like this picture to me of what does the parent look like that lost the child, you always kind of want to vilify that or what you see, but it's a flawed human being, but not a terrible human being. Some cases, I'm sure it is. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. But in other cases, it's real gray. It doesn't feel black and white.
Yeah.
Like it all skews to this middle nebulous, like, geez, this is tough. And the Edelman Family Court, which is downtown, like east of downtown, I have a physical reaction to that place. Like I walk in and I feel pressure on my body because it's all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you see all these kids, you know, you waiting to go into the courtroom. Some of it is happy because some adoptions are happening there. But even still, every adoption, that kid was taken from a biological parent. What was their situation before? So it's just one of those places where I have a visceral physical reaction mm-hmm. to. And so I do not like that place, and I don't want to go back. Though the last time I have been was when we adopted our son, mm-hmm. and that was the best.
Right.
I spoiled it.
Oh, I think we knew, though. I spoiled it.
Spoiler alert. Also, Jon Snow and Dany get together. Daenerys Targaryen. I'm going to ruin everything for everybody. Iron Man's dead, guys.
Wait, I want you to hold on because I'm freezing and I want to get a sweater.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And I'm back, and we're back.
We're back.
Okay, so where we leave off?
I ruined it.
You spoiled it. You spoiled everything. No. We knew what was coming, but it's still a journey till you got to that point. So this, I have multiple questions.
Ask me.
Did the woman want her baby back?
Yes.
She did.
She tried.
Mm-hmm.
And she did just, her best.
Yeah.
So we had visits. We had monitored visits.
With her?
Yes.
So you got to know her, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of an interesting and very complex thing because it's different. Again, every case is different. Some of the time, the parents are totally out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
She was trying. She was really trying. We used to not, she would have monitored visits with a social worker, but then somewhere along the line, our son got real upset when my wife or I would leave the room. So like she would get like 2 hours, 3 days a week.
How old are we talking?
He's 2 months old.
He's still, yeah, very, very young.
So we started, yeah, visits pretty quickly after we got him.
In your mind at this point, are you thinking this might turn into our son or are you allowing yourself to love him fully or are you mildly detached knowing that there's a chance that that he might not be with you?
That's such a good question. I hate to say it, but I felt like I was probably emotionally cautious a little bit.
Right.
There's a lot of speculation and a lot of factors that are so beyond your control. So I remember feeling like, hey man, I'll take care of you and give you love and give you what you need, but I'm not going to fully give myself. Like the way that when my daughter was born, I was lucky enough, I delivered my daughter.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. There's another improv moment. I totally thought that the doctor was joking, but like, do you want to deliver her? And I was like, sure. And next thing I knew, I was doing it. And I was not that way.
You were in a hospital room.
Yeah.
Is that what they're called? Hospital room? Sounds
weird. What else
would
it be called?
Delivery room.
Room. 1, 2, 3, Jinx. yeah.
Yeah, wow.
You know, if I'm being completely honest, because I'm a scaredy cat, mm-hmm. I attribute it to me being emotionally cautious and such a wimp.
Uh-huh.
If it were the 1950s, I would have been happy to be smoking cigarettes and drinking bourbon in the waiting room. Like, you know what I mean? But it's not. Mm-hmm. You have to be there. But I was like, I don't like people that I love in pain. I don't like blood and guts.
Yeah.
This is not my jam. I'm going to stay up top.
Right.
I'll help. I'll provide counter pressure. Things that we learned in prepared childbirth class, all that stuff. But I'm going to keep it pretty.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't want to make a moment that's clearly about me where I'm just like, huh, like just pass out, you know?
Yeah.
you know, like, we got a dad down, you know, it's like,
and then and nobody's paying attention to your wife.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, no, this is the most important thing in the room. Yeah. I mean, just another case of a white, straight white male making it about him. Right. So like, I was like, I didn't want to, but then I was so enthralled and excited by this process.
Yeah.
That I was in it.
Yes.
And I delivered her.
It's crazy.
And I'm so happy that I did.
Yeah.
And the moment that I saw her, just right, my emotion. Heart just exploded, right? Yeah. With him, I felt a little more reserved.
Yeah. You have to be careful a little bit. I don't know.
I don't know either. I feel a little bad admitting that.
I know. It must feel weird.
But I think there was a part of me so hopeful, but just protecting myself.
Yeah.
And that's terrible to say. I feel really bad saying that. Aww. But I love him so much. No, don't. No, it's real. It's real. I love him so much. But I think at that moment initially, but the main point of that was I was resistant and very quickly he won me over. I loved him so much. Like he's such a charming, special little fellow that I was like, oh man, I love this kid so much. But the process, again, is so kooky.
Yeah, like, I just wonder.
It's like long and everyone's speculating. And it's like, you know how like before they play a game on the sports teams, they like all the guys are like, this is what's going to happen. Yes, like, this is what's going to happen. And you're like, well, nobody knows until they play the game, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's what I felt like. We didn't know what the game was. We didn't even know when the game was.
Yeah.
And some of the things came true. Like the experts do know what's going to happen sometimes, or they can foresee it.
Right.
But for us, it's the first time this has ever happened.
Yeah.
You know? So it was, again, being cautious, and I'm just a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
But it was, we had him for quite some time, but through the visits, and then there was a period of time where the biological mom kind of disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
There was a period of time where she was doing quite well, and I was like, oh shit, is mm-hmm. he going to reunify? But then that's a really complex thing.
Yeah, because you want him to, but you want him.
Yes. And you don't want to. It's really difficult to root against somebody, yeah. right? Like, I hope you screw up so I win.
Yeah.
There's no winner, I guess. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
His biological mom is a flawed human being, and I believe that she was unable to provide for him.
Right.
And in the long term, is unable to provide for him. But she loved him,
mm-hmm.
and she certainly demonstrated that in as many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Were there some like questionable things that I would see during visits, like monitor visits, where I'd be like, oh, that's not the best parent choice, but it isn't about that. They're not trying to weigh like, hey, are you going to have a better life with this family as opposed to this family? They're basically saying, going back to the reunification thing, the parent has to demonstrate to us, we have to give them time, demonstrate to us that they are no longer capable of being the parent. And so then we have to, because it's an incredible burden to have a child in the foster care system, on the system,
yeah.
on the taxpayer, on everything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, especially thinking about what you said about like three different lawyers for the original parent and the child and the county. Is mm-hmm. that what you said? Yeah, that's...
Yeah, for DCFS, yeah.
Yeah.
So it had its series of tumultuous kind of experiences, and we started to get to know her better through the visits. I mean, there was one time in one of the visits, she said, he looks like you.
Oh my gosh.
Which is weird, but really funny. But then you're like, oh yeah, this kid's mimicking what I'm doing with him. But I know for a fact, he doesn't have any of my DNA.
Right.
And it's kind of strange for the bio mom to be like, he looks like you. You know, like, what do you say to that? I was kind of like, yeah. Yeah, I got a goofy face. He makes goofy faces too. Like, you know, but I'm like teaching him like eyebrows. And it's like, he makes expressions like me.
Yes.
Which I was like, oh, that's really interesting. And people would say that pretty frequently as we were like raising him when he was a baby. Like, he looks like you.
Yeah.
Then at some point, there's two really big things in the foster to adopt process. When it goes from a foster case to an adoption case. But before that has to occur, there's something called termination of parental rights.
Mm.
All the experts say TPR.
Okay.
That means they've done what they can, and now the parent is legally terminated to any parental rights to this child.
Okay.
The entire time that the child is in the system, as I understand it, they are technically a ward of the state. Like they belong to the state at that point legally.
After the TPR? Before?
The whole time.
Okay, sorry.
So they're not...
I got distracted by that toilet noise.
Is that a toilet noise?
Yeah, somebody flushed in the Airbnb.
Oh, it sounds like somebody's like got a recliner that has electric, but it's like taking a really long time. Like,
oh, there's the shower. It's cool.
Are they? You have people there?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
One from Spain, one from London.
Oh.
Er.
Wonderful. Okay. So yeah. That's a big deal. And it's a big deal because that's when it becomes an adoption case, but also the biological parent is no longer represented. It's sad, too, though.
Yeah.
So as I said before, the Edelman Family Court, I just don't like that joint.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No.
Again, admitting I'm a total wimp.
Is this where everybody has to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
As I understand it.
Right.
Maybe there's another
place. Like everybody
place,
in the county or whatever.
Yeah. I think so. Mm-hmm. It is a very large building, entirely family law and courts. So it's all that. There's no other stuff.
Wow.
So on the day of the parental rights, the termination of parental rights hearing, something occurred. We were both going to go, but then something occurred and I had to stay home with our daughter. I volunteered. I was like, I'll stay home. Because I knew how tough it is. And at that point, the biological mom had been incarcerated. So this is a while. So we got him in July of 2014.
Yeah.
And this is now November of 2015. So like a year and 3 or 4 months.
Okay, gotcha.
So the mom had been incarcerated for, again, it was mostly just dumb stuff related to drug use and bad choices, you know. So again, empathize, feel bad for her, but clearly unable to provide. So that didn't help her case. But there was a time where she was doing quite well and then fell off, unfortunately. So in that case, she's brought from like the county jail to the courthouse. And like, that's humiliating and terrible because you're technically a prisoner. So you're handcuffed and you're in the outfit. It's not a good look for anybody, right? Like, everybody knows. Nobody, you don't walk by anybody.
She probably hasn't seen her son in a while.
But he's not there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she has not.
Okay.
He's not at those, most of those hearings, he's not at.
Okay.
He's representative, though, obviously. So, Rachel.
So, I just pictured a lawyer dressed like a baby.
Yeah, did I tell you that all of his representation is baby? It's like Boss Baby. So, like, there were times like, Your Honor, I just poo-pooed my pants. I'm going to need a minute. It's real fussy, and sometimes it takes a while because we're waiting on this baby lawyer. Incoherent. But the judge can speak baby, so it's good.
Oh, good. So they can just communicate.
Yeah.
That's nice.
We have a little ear thing, like when you go to an international museum. Right. And they tell you what's up.
Or like the UN.
Exactly. So on that day, this is my wife's story, but she told me it, so I can tell it.
Yeah.
So I'm not there. I'm comfortably at home, wimping out. You know, the mom shows up, and that's when there have been stays, you know? So like there have been things where it's like, oh, this could be it. We'll give you 3 more months. So things have extended. Now we're getting to it. It seems like they're going to terminate.
Mm-hmm.
So they terminate her parental rights, which is just has to be heartbreaking.
Yeah.
They're saying you no longer, like, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. You can't even imagine, right? Because of like all of that stuff, the emotion, the biological link, all of that stuff. So Rachel is not seated up front because, again, she's not represented.
Mm-hmm.
But the mom asks, protecting her privacy as well.
Put that mic closer to your face.
Sorry, the mom, sorry. I was asked to speak to Rachel, and oh, it's the worst. She says, thank you so much for loving my son, and I know that you will take good care of him. Mm. Like she said, she asked the judge, can I speak to Rachel? And like, so she's sitting there, it's so terrible, like at your lowest, right? You know, handcuffed and... Mm. humiliated and oh. And so for her to think that, I was like, oh man, that's just such a beautiful human moment to say, like, you know, this is the right thing. And I think probably to ease, she's a human, you know, to, because there is something on her conscience, like about him and who he is and who is his link to his mom.
Well, it must be such a great comfort to her too, to know that her son would be in good hands.
Yes. Hopefully.
But she had that was her gut feeling.
Yes.
About you guys. And so that's good. You gave her a gift. In addition,
she gave us a gift.
Right, of course. But you didn't just, you know, waltz in there and steal her baby away.
No. And I think some people have some boundaries, and rightfully so, like that they want to. It's so complicated.
Right, I hear you. So people might not want to be have that much contact with the biological parent because it would be make it more difficult.
Potentially.
Oh, man.
So
it's all very complex, yeah.
It's super complex.
Yeah.
The most complex thing I've ever had to deal with.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
But a great day for us to a certain extent, yeah. Right? It was not a great day. We didn't celebrate. It was like a... whew, you know, because then it becomes an adoption case and everything's going your way, but there is a process to that. Right. So then it took another 4 to 6 months, six months-ish for us to finalize adoption. And that's the only, that was the last time I went to the Edelman court, and that's cool because that's when they go and they say this, you're legally his parents. And that was amazing.
And so I think I remember seeing that post, and this is why I knew that you had a foster child, or that you had adopted, because I remember seeing a picture of you guys, and I was like, oh, I didn't know that about Frank.
Well, we couldn't.
Oh, that's right. You couldn't put pictures up.
Yeah. So we would tell people that we saw that we're doing this thing, but you couldn't post anything public of our son, or our foster son at that point.
Yeah.
And I have to shout out my daughter, who is just so, I mean, she was brilliant this whole process. So she was 3 when we got him, and we were trying to like minimize any trauma if in the event he goes back. So we were reluctant to say, this is your brother. So like, we prepared her when we were going through classes, like we might get a baby friend.
Oh,
they may stay with us for a while. And she was so excited, right? And she was adorable, but she negotiated the complexity of that pretty well and handled it really well. So we were trying our best to like, we don't want to give trauma to our kid to be like, hey, now you don't have your sibling anymore. Right. So like, this is her baby friend. And then a while in, she was like, can I call him my brother? Mm. Like she so badly wanted to say it. And then as we were, you know, it was going on, we're like, yes, you can say that.
Oh my gosh.
But like, she was amazing.
Ugh.
So yeah, she did very well and was very excited. And she would even try, like she would look at us, but put her arm around him and be like, hi, brother. it's okay.
She's testing.
Yeah, totally testing. So then when we adopted him, and then he was ours, like he was our son. And, you know,
and
arguable,
he was about 2.5 or 3 or so?
He was just before his second birthday.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he was almost 2. And I don't even know if he really knew what was up.
Sure.
But we've been very honest with him as best we can, you know, to let him know that he was in his mommy's tummy and we have pictures of her. And then he came to us and his mommy loved him and we loved him and we were lucky enough to have him. And we are certain that there will be some pull someday for him to know more about her. So we maintain some contact.
Okay.
My wife does mostly. Again, I'm a wimp and have difficulty negotiating these complex things. But so we send pictures and stuff. But we also felt like for how young he is, it can't be about the adults. It has to be about him. Like, because we know someday. But what we also know from her past is that this was her 3rd child in the system. So she's in and out of their lives. And we just like, we don't want to like repeat or continue trauma.
Right.
You know, it's like when you have people, kids that have come from divorced families that their dad shows up every 3 years.
Right.
And then gives them a toy and then they're like, dad.
Right.
And then leaves again. And they're like, dad, you know, like don't want to do that, you know?
So you maintain contact. Is it just sort of, do they actually see each other? Or is it, okay, that's it.
Not our son.
Okay.
My wife and her have seen each other. Mm. But we just feel like it's too much.
And that's up to you, but you have to somehow communicate it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah. So at this point, we are not legally bound to have any contact. Mm. We don't have to do anything.
Right.
People, I think they call it an open adoption, which I understand and like a lot of people advocate for, but it's just not that easy.
Right.
You know, like I think there needs to be some sort of boundaries in as well.
Yeah.
And it can't, again, we can't make it about making the adults feel good. It's got to be about the kids. So it's tough. So the complexity continues, right?
Right.
But I mean, I feel like parenthood in general is like really tough. So this is just another part of that being difficult. It's a different complexity than a biological kid, but it's still, you know, because people, I think sometimes when they think about adoption of these unknowns and things, and it's like, well, in my wife and I's family, there's mm-hmm. there's bad genes. There's alcoholism mm-hmm. and depression and, you know, and other health risks. Uh-huh. So like, you know, so like you're going to get this perfect child, right. you know, even if it's ours, right? And that link, while important, I think... I firmly believe like now, like I never have a doubt that child is 100% my son.
Yeah.
Like there's no, I don't treat him any different. So yeah. In some ways I probably am more effusive in some ways because he's my son. And like, that's just exciting for to have a dad and a son relationship. I love my daughter so mm-hmm. much, but like there's things that like he likes to do that I like to do.
How old's he now?
5.
Aww.
And he's the best. He's a great kid.
Yeah. So he's a different race than you guys.
Yes.
In the adoption system, what do they suggest? Do they say it's a good idea to adopt somebody from... I mean, what's the story?
There's a whole class that right. talks about cross-race adoption. It's complicated.
A class at the agency.
When you're getting certified that says like, hey, you know, you may not get a kid that's exactly like you. Mm-hmm. And so having sensitivity to that and trying to be cognizant of cultural differences mm-hmm. and all of that. So it continues to be a thing that we learn about and a thing that will get more complicated as he gets older. Mm-hmm. We've already had some complexities because of that, but trying to negotiate them as best we can. But like there are things that he's going to deal with as a young black man that I know nothing about and my wife knows nothing about.
Yeah. Right?
So we can't give him that stuff. So we're going to rely on friends and people that have experienced that sort of stuff and try to surround him with at least resources mm-hmm. and relationships with people that can speak to that. You know, especially now, like just where we are in 2019, like there are times where you feel like, you know, young black men are
right.
It's dangerous. It's more dangerous for them than maybe anybody else.
Yeah.
And so I get fearful about that and I'll try to educate him, but I can't speak from experience. So like having friends that can help us.
Yeah.
And you know, I think naturally, but again, so this sounds crazy because that happens, but it's going to get complex with my daughter when she's a teenager. Cause shit gets complex.
Yeah.
When you have girls that are teenagers.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just kind of, for me, it rolls with it. There are some, you know, it's rolled into the responsibility.
Do you feel like you get judgment from other people out there in the world? Like, I feel like there is controversy out there about whether or not it's a good idea.
I don't know. I'm experiencing it. I'm not looking at it as though
I think a child needs a parent or two.
Sure.
Whatever race they are.
No, I absolutely can understand why someone would ask the question and even say like, who do you think you are to be able to do this thing?
Right.
Right. All I can say is I'm going to do my best.
Yeah.
It is controversial, I imagine, to some people. But as you said, at the end of the day, it doesn't change the fact that this child needed a parent mm-hmm. or parents and we're doing the best that we can.
Yeah. I will say, I think maybe I'm thinking about it because when I was trying to pick a sperm donor, there was like, do I pick somebody that looks like me? so that I look like my kid? Mm. Or do I avoid having a, you know, a regular old little white boy? And yeah, have somebody like, I don't have to.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, well,
it's interesting, but, because you, yeah, I mean.
But I spoke with somebody who was Korean, and she was like, Molly, if you have like a little Asian baby, I think she said she was going to be pissed off at me or something.
Oh.
And she was just saying, unless I raised them in the culture that they came from, sure, et cetera. And then I talked to another friend, a black guy, and he said, well, I think your kid's going to want to look like their one parent that they're going to have. And then I was like, oh, well, that kind of makes me feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose a guy that looked like me.
Because, exactly like you?
Yes. I think it was my brother.
Too soon. I can understand that.
But it's different for adopting, obviously. But I just sort of, there's a question of race and it makes you question, like me, makes me question, why am I doing that? Am I a racist person? Or?
Well, it seems like you thought it through. I mean, I don't know where you're at as far as like...
I mean, I'm definitely racist.
Okay, thank you. Okay, that's what I thought. I was going to say, like, just judging by some of the art in your house, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I mean, talk about the most complex topics of all time, right? It's really difficult. And frankly, I don't know. I mean, I'm learning as I go.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be sensitive of it and like, and be cognizant of some of the things that he will encounter or already has.
Yeah.
People can quickly surmise what's up.
Right.
When I'm in the grocery store and I have a white daughter and a black son, like they can be like, oh, okay. You know, and he's calling me daddy. Like,
yeah,
they can figure it out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I see nothing else. I'm not in charge of what other people think. I'm in charge of my relationship with my kids and what and how I raise them.
Yeah.
So I can't get caught up in all that. Having said that, I am responsible for preparing him for life.
Yeah.
And so I recognize my shortcomings in that regard. So I will have to resource, mm-hmm, and outsource some of those things.
Mm-hmm. But at your agency, they're totally open to whatever. They don't push you one way or the other.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I think they present the realities, yeah, of it. But I mean, for the most part, they want to get kids...
Parents.
Yeah. Homes. In foster care and in adoption situations. So it's like, I don't know, if there's an emergency situation and you're like, oh, I wish I had, you know, the flood. And you're like, I wish I had the other bucket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like you're going to think about what you need in the moment. I think that they're viewing it as like, this child needs, we need to find a situation for them.
Yeah.
I think there are some situations where they will look. I imagine they would. But the fact of the matter is at least in Los Angeles, the list of, you know, Latinx and African-American kids in the system and the list of Latinx and American African-American adoptive and foster parents is shorter.
Right.
So they have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there's a lot of adoption, international adoption, right?
Yeah.
Where we see a lot of kids from China and going to white families. So I don't know. I mean, I could see in particular someone of that race saying it would be better if they were with someone of their own race.
Right.
I could absolutely see that. There's nothing about some of these situations that's ideal, right?
Right.
You know, yeah, it would be better that my parents didn't get divorced when I was 7. Parenting is a two-person job in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But things happen. And there were a fair amount of people that had cross-race adoptions and were single parents that came in. They brought in a lot of speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
really interesting. I want to go.
It's fun. It was fun. Like, and some heartbreaking stories, but also some frigging adorable ones.
Yeah.
Like, there was this perfect family, in my opinion. It was these two handsome, sweet gay men. I think they were white, or, you know, they looked European in some way. And these two kids... One kid was black and one kid was Latino. And I was like, these people are so beautiful. Mm. Like, this is a perfect family. Like, it doesn't all have to be the same. Like, And they're actually at the agency. There's a picture of them on the wall. I'm like, that family is, it's a good looking family.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't all look the same.
Yeah.
So like, I also think it tests us to kind of expand what our definition of family is and what definition of child and parental relationship.
Yeah.
So I don't have the answers in that regard, but I also think I know I love my son.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do the best I can and hopefully prepare him. But man, there are some curveballs that life is going to give us. And, you know, there may be a possibility of even greater curveballs for him because of who and what he is, which is a real bummer.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do my best.
Yeah.
So we've talked about it and like he's been cognizant of it. Like he says, oh, that person has brown skin. And like, so he knows. Mm-hmm. We've done many things to try to, so he understands his differences, but also his similarities.
Yeah.
And right now, actually, he's in TK and we're fortunate that he has a few kids that look like him, which is nice because in preschool, there weren't any, you know?
Yeah.
So he was like the only brown boy.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have other
kids.
I don't
know what TK is.
Transitional kindergarten.
Between pre and K?
Yep.
Wow.
It's like kids who are a little younger or need a little extra time, like younger in the age spectrum that are maybe turning 5 while kindergarten, while other a lot of kids turn 6 when they're in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. There's so much that I want to ask you, but I don't feel like we have time because we're already over.
How long is it? What time is it?
Well, this has been recording for 1 hour and 7 minutes.
Oh, my God. yeah. I have to meet somebody.
Okay.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. This is why I'm saying...
Can I send an email real quick?
What?
I was talking so much.
No, you weren't talking too much, though. You were perfectly talking. Right. Well, so I'm going to ask you questions another day because there's...
we can. I'm so sorry that I put
No, it's Frank.
Okay.
It's just a huge topic, that's all.
It is a huge topic.
Like another question I have is, did any of this cost money? And another question I have is, what would you have done if he was all screwed up from drugs in utero? And it's just, there's just so much. And questions you can't answer. That second question is too hard.
No. I'll talk about whatever.
but I think we'll leave it on where we had it.
I'm sorry that it's such an abrupt ending.
It always happens with my podcast.
Really?
I was okay, like, oh my God, I gotta go. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Okay, good. Okay, then I don't feel bad.
But I can
talk about it because it for me, sorry to be so verbose, but it's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
I have to say. It's terrifying and exhilarating and easily the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah. And you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'm assuming I haven't met your kid.
Don't rush to judgment. I might be really bad at this.
But it sounds like you've got a pretty beautiful family yourself.
I like them.
Yeah.
I think they like me. It's pretty good.
Oh, I hope I do get to meet your kids sometime.
I'll show you pictures.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Frank.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Bye. Well, shit, I really love that conversation, and I think that story's incredible, and I think Frank is such a wonderful guy. Frank, thank you so much for coming on my podcast and sharing your story and being so open with me. Oh, it makes me feel, I'm just so honored that you would talk about all of this with me, so thank you. Thank you, listeners, for, you know, listening and rating and subscribing and reviewing all of it. If you haven't done that yet, I mean, I've said this, I say this the same way every single week, but like, if you haven't done that yet, I think you're out of your fucking mind. You're still listening to this show, so why won't you just go and rate it and review it? I mean, I know there's got to be more of you because there's only like 300 ratings and like 100 or 150 reviews. And I mean, that's a lot, don't get me wrong, but there's at least a couple thousand of you listening. So you got to get on it, all right? Okay. All you have to do is like write a fake name like Molly is so sexy, glass is sharp, Christmas is coming, oh what a night, late December back in 69, that kind of thing. Then write something like, great show, makes my drive to work fly by. That's all you have to do. And then 5 stars. What do I have to do to get you to do it? Do I need to read the reviews online? I mean, on the air?
I'd love to read the reviews on air, but I would basically just be tooting my own horn, and that makes me feel like an asshole. But here's one. Let's see. What's the last one? Here we go. Here's the latest. Let's see. Spermcast. Okay, the last review I have. Oh, okay. There's 377 ratings. 366 of them are 5 stars, which is pretty fucking great. Then there's 129 customer reviews. Here's the latest review. It says, came for the shrimps, stayed for the sperm. That's funny. The Pistol Shrimps is my basketball team, if some of you don't know. And the username is, oh, Marty Loves Marty. Okay, this is an Amanda London, Matt Gourley fan. If you, listeners, you don't know, Amanda and her husband call each other Marty. So that's pretty cute. And the review says, Molly's incredibly brave, vulnerable, thoughtful, and funny. I'm a 31-year-old guy that doesn't want kids, but find it important to stay informed about family planning and women's issues and her, Amanda, and guests make this an informative must-listen. Wow. Thank you so much, Marty Loves Marty. Or is it Marty Loves Smarty? All right. Anyway, love you guys so much. Follow Spermcast on Instagram at Spermcast. Go to the website, spermcastpod.com. Email me at spermcast@gmail.com. Text me at 323-741-1818 or leave a voicemail at 323-741-1818. Don't forget about extraordinaryfamilies.org if you're interested in the idea of fostering to adopt. We all know where I am in my journey right now, but this is definitely something I'm considering for the future. Whether or not this leg of my journey works out, that seems like something I definitely want to do in the future. So very, very curious about that, and so thankful to Frank for filling me in on some of that stuff. All right, I love you. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite.
Original.
Powered by ACAST.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.